Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show today. I've got a special treat for you. I've got U.S. Army Major retired Ed Polito. Ed, how are you doing this morning?
Well, it's a great day to be an American and a great day to be on your show, man. And hey, highlighting the nonprofit world, that's real important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're doing so many great things with Folds of Honor. And now you've got this new thing, JDME, Heart of a Lion Foundation. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and your new venture here?
Well, and let me kind of, I think I should begin with just letting everybody know kind of a little bit of a historical account of where I'm at in life. Certainly my real story. I mean, I came in the Army at the age of 17, took the oath of office to defend this great nation, enlisted, went into the non-commissioned officer side of the house as well. And then ended up as an officer. I kind of felt like that's the Mustang in us, or the green to gold, but I felt like that was kind of my calling. I had seen my father put on his combat boots, and my brother followed in his footsteps too, joining the Navy. So our family knew and understood that we had a history of serving our country and understanding the importance of service to nation. That's something that's missing today. And so, not to say anything negative about it, but it's what you see every day. People don't have the patriotic spirit in their heart and in their soul, and they dislike what's so powerful about this great nation. And like you know, when you take that oath of office to defend this great nation, it certainly is about, you know, our faith in God, our love for our families, and certainly our love for our country. And that to me is what inspired me to take the oath at age 17 and serve the military for almost 20 years of my life. And it was the best thing that I could have ever done, spending time not only doing what I thought was the best thing for me in 1985, 86 timeframe, but understanding that, you know what, my parents didn't have a lot of money. And the thing about it is that's when you kind of set your goals and your objectives on what you wanted to do. And I was real resilient with that, with everybody else running around over the summertime, having a good time. Guess what? I decided I wanted to join the United States Army, and I did, and had a great, great stellar career. And at 20 years of almost, well, close to 20 years of service, I hit an improvised explosive device, a roadside bomb, and that would change my life forever. And I'll talk about that here in a minute.
It's just a powerful story. We have a similar background. I started enlisted at the bottom of the barrel, the E1, and I went through a commissioning program myself. We get that Mustang mentality. And it's so interesting to talk to people that were enlisted their whole time, were officers their whole time, and then to see the difference of people that have done both sides. And it's just a love. When you get to that point, it's a love for your family and a love for your fellow soldier, sailor, airman, or marine, or space cadet now, I guess, with the Space Force. But go Space Force, absolutely. I got a friend that's commissioned in space. His last promotion, he took the oath of office for the Space Force. So congrats, Joe Chignola, for leading the way in that aspect. But, you know, what we're doing and our stuff is a little bit different. I'm helping the helpers. My goal is to give, you know, people the advice they need, the steps they need to do nonprofit work better, foundation work better. And your heart for helping the people around you is just is astronomical. I met you when you were senior VP at Folds of Honor and doing great things. We had a couple of friends in common with Brian Paul and Chris Morgan, just great Americans. I love both of them to death. I love what they're doing. But you brought in, you know, Medal of Honor recipient Leroy Petrie and had a great conversation with him. And he's got probably the coolest robot hand I've ever seen. And he's got a great spirit and a great attitude. Like, how do you connect with all these fantastic people? I see you at the Trump rallies. I see you with John Daly. I see you just every sneaking where that most people want to be. How are you getting to these places? How are you building these relationships?
It's funny because, you know, starting out, I've always had that knack of being in the middle of something, you know, and I think it all started working at the United Way. I go back to that. I ended up getting the degree emphasis that I needed. I got a great education. I've got a great faithful opportunity. I have my family is very supportive. you know, I'm getting ready to celebrate my anniversary here this month, you know, in December. So it's a very special time. And that was the same time I got commissioned too as an officer. And so to me, you know, from the educational background to where I'm at today, the real reason that I think all of this has happened is that I've had an opportunity to really tell a story. And I learned that in the nonprofit world, storytelling is one of the most important and impactful things. And it's not just storytelling on what you've done. It's storytelling on how you, what you've done could be enhanced and also implemented in someone else's life. And I think all of us have written books and all of this and that, but you know, how does your experience resonate with someone else, and how do you mentor, and how do you, that's one of the things in the military that we did very well was mentoring our service members to be the best that they could be. I remember a service member would come in, you could tell that they probably weren't squared away. They went to the wrong boot camp possibly. And guess what? Now you got to take them by the hand and say, hey, listen, this is the way we roll here. And modeling is very important. Mentoring, modeling, and understanding, you know, some guiding principles. I tell you this because as we talk today, I want you to really think through kind of where I come from. So I'll give you an example. One of the things that I do every day and in meeting the people that I do, it's always mission first, people always. That used to be the mission first, team always approach. And that's kind of the slogan from the military. Well, guess what? I took that slogan and I kind of put the people always piece to that. So mission first is, you know what? We accomplished a mission together. People always, we connect with people. And the thing about it is, not only do we connect, but we serve, and we serve people. And one of the things that's kind of been a little bit, you know, kind of on the back burner lately for me, and I'll give you an example because I think it's kind of good for this conversation. From a church point of view or a religious point of view, you know, with this pandemic, I will tell you that if the world it went in chaos, and it sort of seems that way, but it's really not, okay? I mean, we're eating and we're doing a podcast, but is it in chaos? Well, in some ways, yes, for some people, because some people are struggling. But in that same token, I look at it, and you've been to deployed, you know what that all means. You go into the combat zone, you better hope you have everything ready to go. And you better hope your training that you executed on and you rehearsed and you trained on, that now you implement in real life. And to me, you know, I bring that up because I see a lot of people not wanting to put the sweat equity into that. And so what does that mean? Like, for example, in the church world and in the religious world, a lot of the churches have closed their doors. What bothered me about 3 weeks ago was that a specific church basically turned their back on a family. A family that probably needed Thanksgiving, a family that was probably military family that was destitute, that needed some hope. And I'm not saying that we're the only organization in town that can help them, but there are many others. And does it have to always fall back on the nonprofit world? No, it has to be a collective, enhanced community action, and everyone together working for the betterment of all. And that's where I differ a little bit with our political leaders. It's not a free handout; it's a hand up, just like that. You know, Wounded Warrior Project, man, you look at their logo, that logo's tough. The reason that logo's tough, and I'm talking about another organization, is because they have that veteran or that service member, and no matter who's on that other side, they're going to lift them up. And I think lifting people up is the most important thing. And so one of the things that, to answer your question, and that was a little bit of a long-winded question answer, but that's what I do. I try to lift people up. This past week, we talked to Lee Bryce, the country music artist. He's in for 2021 to help us out. I speak to John Daly on a regular basis. He's battling cancer, but you know, the resilient nature of what he's doing, he had to give up Diet Cokes. And he's given up, you know, drinking at the rate that he was at. And you know what? He's making some healthy choices. Why? Because he wants to continue playing on the tour. And so it's funny because we've got the father and son, and it's really not called the father and son now because that name's not even a good name anymore. But, and again, that's a different story for a different day. But we're doing an event with PNC Bank, which is a big bank around the country. And we're going to be in Orlando, and there'll be a lot of celebrities there, a lot of interaction with a lot of different folks. And I've just been in the right place at the right time. And that's the best answer I can give you. But I'm also in a place where I can tell a story. And for all the nonprofits out there, tell your story, but not only tell your story, but tell the story of someone else and how you've helped that individual or how that individual has helped themselves. And when you do that, I think that donors really look at that in a most positive way, and they are part of the overall mission. And that, to me, is really something that I think we can attribute to, you know, the love for our faith, our love for our families, and our love for our country, and having substance in those three areas. Because if you don't care about those three areas, you won't be successful in your work.
Absolutely. And I love how you talk about mission first, people always. Like my personal motto is to elevate others and provide value without expectation. And when we have people that are coming from this place, and I think we're coming from the same place here, where it's not a competition. You mentioned Wounded Warrior Project. You've mentioned other organizations. I know we've done work with a few organizations together in town here in Oklahoma City. And I just love it. I love that people are coming together to do whatever the thing is. It doesn't matter that Travis's name is on the marquee. It doesn't matter if Major Ed's name is on the marquee. We're there in the mission where it needs to be. We're working together to get whatever it is accomplished, because I can't do it alone. You can't do it alone. And we recognize that. And it's a whole community action effort, like you said. Absolutely. I love it.
Not to interrupt you, but I got an idea just because you brought this up. But in 2021, I'm working on an initiative where I'm going to solicit a very powerful organization, and I'm going to bring in an organization to help me bring other organizations to facilitate discussion around veterans issues in our community. I'm not saying that it's not been done. Brian and his team have done a great job on it too, but I think it needs some major leadership from someone like me that can do something to where I can bring people together and kind of just, if with a quarterly basis type of meeting where we talk about what we're all doing in the space locally. And Tulsa's done a great job of that. And Oklahoma City needs to jump on board and get back to those principles. It takes like a united way to broker that and convene people like that. But it also takes some leadership. And I think, you know, when like people like you and I are faces to this, we don't have to do what we're doing, but we do it because it's purposeful. It's a job. And then we get some satisfaction. And that to me is what's missing in America is what's the end goal? What are you getting? What satisfies you? What drives you? What passionately makes you tick? And man, until you figure that all out, all you're doing is spinning your wheels.
Oh, absolutely. I know there's a lot of people that I interact with on a regular basis who just go to work, they stop by the liquor store on the way home, and they come and they grill out and have some cocktails, complain about their job. And when they're home, they're complaining about their job. When they're at work, they're complaining about their family, and they're not really getting what it's like to be part of a community and build something together. And I know, especially with veterans that get out, there's always this kind of lack of mission. There's this lack of purpose. And when we can, you know, bring people together and galvanize them towards a cause and focus and deep dive on something, people get this sense of purpose. And all of a sudden they start caring again, and they care about themselves, and they care about their family. Then they start caring about their neighbors. And when people start caring, you know, that far out, start caring about their neighbors, then you start building a nation and rebuilding a nation and healing. And I think that's what is so important. And that's a lot of what you're doing with the JDME Foundation. Give us a little rundown of what that looks like and who you're trying to help here with this.
Yeah. And so to just be clear too, I've represented Folds of Honor Foundation for the last 13 years to provide, the spouses and children of the fallen wounded educational scholarships. And then just to kind of sort of backtrack, I'm also one of the founders at Warriors for Freedom, which provides mental, physical, and wellness. That's here in the state of Oklahoma. And just to be real upfront, I took sort of that model of what they're doing in Oklahoma, and I really looked at all the various areas of emphasis. And I think as we were talking earlier, I talked about, and this was off chat here, but I was talking about healthcare being one of the top priorities. I talked about mental health being another priority. I also talked about compensation and benefits and information and referral and having the connections to your local community, kind of the one-stop shop of services. I don't really like that word, but I think, or that phrase, but I think what I like about it is that when we're in the military, you have leadership and you have a chain of command and you have all of the things that go along with it. So in a way, the safety net is there for everyone to pick up the pieces if someone goes down. And in the civilian world, that's not like that. Everybody's kind of on their own brink. Everybody's out here, even in the nonprofit world, everybody's out here for their own purpose, for their own opportunity. And what John Daly and the Major Ed Heart of a Lion Foundation, and that the Heart of a Lion, just to describe to everyone, is John Daly's lion and my Purple Heart in it. And what we're trying to do is not only do work with our friends at St. Jude's Children's Hospital, because we know that cancer is a very important endeavor in this country to support that effort, but we're also supporting the Boys and Girls Club. And we support the Boys and Girls Club in Arkansas and Atlanta, all over this country. And one of the things that I'd say about all of that is that we put a third pillar in there when I joined John in July. And let me tell you something. Everyone has asked me, man, why would you take you have a great gig with Folds of Honor and now you're going to do something different? And why would you do that during COVID? And I'm like, well, why not? Sometimes the hardest things to do are when it's the hardest times to do them. And that's exactly how I approached it. And when John asked me to join this, now the mission at the John Daly Heart of a Lion, John Daly Major Ed Heart of a Lion Foundation is to provide mental, physical, and wellness support to our nation's heroes and their families, to help our first responders, and to help America's children. And America's children's piece is to thrive and be successful, patriotism, citizenship, and understanding all of that. And that's kind of why I travel across the country is, you know, I've done probably 10 Zoom calls with students in high schools. And that's not just, I'm not patting myself on the back. That's where it has to start. And we have to start educating these young people on what we're doing. And then the other thing too is we want to make sure that our veterans have the right support that they need. And so at the John Daly Major Ed Heart of a Lion Foundation is to provide that holistic and wellness type of actionables, whether it's employment, home ownership, making sure that, you know what, that they have the right unmet needs taken care of, and that, you know what, these veterans are taking care of themselves and taking care of their families. They're thriving, they're successful, and they're community leaders. And then they end up like you and I, speaking and doing all kinds of other things. Not everyone's going to be like you and I, but I think what we can do is give them the tools and the resources to be a real estate agent, to be in the insurance industry, to be in banking, to be a plumber, to be HVAC producer, electrical. I mean, whatever it may be, there's so many opportunities out here, but if they don't have the right education and the right support, they're not going to get there. And that to me is what peer-to-peer at the John Daly Major Ed Heart of a Lion Foundation is all about. And then our other pillar is working with organizations all over this nation. If they're doing great work, why are we trying to get into that space? Heck, I want to send my hunters to the Whitcock Foundation because I know that he's going to do a great job. He's going to take these guys hunting and he's going to put on a good experience. Major Ed doesn't need to do that, but we can fund that piece. And that to me is a collaborative piece. And that's why I'm asking funders to help us, because that's when we're going to be able to provide the best service possible. And necessarily John Daly Major Ed may not be the right conduit for this veteran, but maybe the Whitcock Foundation or, you know, Veterans for Life or, you know, my good friends at Warriors for Freedom, maybe. And that to me is kind of what the premise of what we're trying to do here is all about.
That is, you just hit on something I talk about frequently in my episodes. If you're a longtime listener, you're like, oh, here Travis goes again. But Major Ed understands that he might not be the absolute best conduit for what is the need. And those of you listening, you might not be the best conduit. I know I'm not the best nonprofit consultant for everyone, and that's okay. But ask me the question, and I can steer you to someone that's their zone of genius. That's the thing that they rock at. That's what they excel at. That's what they've been doing better than anyone for years. Let me hand you off to them because I know they're going to do a great job. It's not that I can't do it or I shouldn't do it, but I know where my expertise lies. And the same with Major Ed. There's nothing wrong with passing the baton to another organization that's going to do a great job. Because when you're a part of the community, it doesn't matter if your organization is the pillar, right? It matters that you're all working together, whether it's to build a foundation with children, make them understand their responsibilities and civic duties, whether it's taking care of veterans that are all over the stinking country. I mean, we're in every facet of life here, and just making sure we can all work and grow together. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Well, let me call you to action, because, you know, we're on an actionable here, and I'd be willing to do this with you. But, you know, maybe today we create the Ground Pounder movement, where, you know, and I, that's kind of my word that I use for what we're trying to do. But the Ground Pounder movement, and my thought process would be that maybe you bring in all these different organizations on a Zoom call, and then we all sort of collaborate and know what we all do, and create a template of, hey, here's our strategic alliance partners, and all of us working together. And it's someone like you that can pull that off with somebody like me. You've got this pulpit right now with this nonprofit connection that you're doing. And I just think that you've already had some of these people on as guests. I just think it's time for all of us to sort of commit to doing something powerful. And I think it's a good time to do it, and maybe roll it out in January as a way that, hey, listen, if someone wants to go hunting and, you know, or no, surfing. I mean, look, I'm not into the surfing thing, but man, but you know what? Have I ever done it? You bet. I did it in Costa Rica. But my thing is, with one leg, how do you do that? I'm sure they figured all that out.
That's figured out. Have you met Chris Biggs? He also has one leg, and he does wake surfing behind a boat. He'll get out there, set up, and he'll let go of the triangle, and he'll be out surfing in the wake behind the boat. He's got one leg himself. I'd love to connect you to and see how he's doing it.
Well, let's do it. And I think to me that would be a good deal for the show. And I, you know, it could be one of those things we do it once a month, and we all get these organizations together. Everybody's talking, and we have one that presents every month, and everybody knows what they're doing. I just, see that thing to me is the systems building. That's what I learned at the United Way when I was working there. And I actually missed that for a long time. Travis, I got to tell you, at Folds of Honor, one of the things that, and I think you asked this great question. When I was at Folds of Honor, and I still do a lot with them, one of the things that I learned, and I've learned in the last, during this COVID, is all of those great things that are done, they can all go to the wayside if you don't continue to do them, and we forget what's been done and what got us there. And that, to me, in 13 years of my life, I gave a lot of sweat equity. The people that actually did not benefit from that, sometimes lost a little of my time, was my family. And I had to realize and come to grips with the fact that, you know, being gone all the time, that's just not a recipe for success at my age and with my health concerns. And, you know, at 52 years old and being gone all the time, look, I did that already when I was in the military. And am I doing it again on these formative years that are so important? And so I'm using this pulpit to get back to my roots of when I worked at the United Way, when I convened people, when I did research, when I did program and organizational implementation, meaning an organization. We find out that there's a gap in service in the community, and we address it with a new organization that tackles that problem. And you can only do that with research and convening people to do that. And that's where this convening idea comes from, where we're going to do research and convening at the John Daly Major Ed Heart of a Lion Foundation to find out what the issues are that are upon us for our veterans. What's the key ingredients of what's happening right now in turmoil with veterans? Suicide's been a huge issue. Why hasn't that been solved? And I'm going to tell you, it's not a veteran issue. It's a cultural issue, and it's happening as an epidemic right now with COVID. It's happening with an epidemic with our kids. And a lot of it has to do with distress, with expectations, success, and all those ingredients that really kind of recipe into financial disaster. And that's why I tell people, if your compensation and your benefits are not where they are, then that's what we were talking about earlier. You know, if you're not getting the right pay and you can't find your focus and this and that, all of a sudden you go into deep debt, man, you're going to go into spiral and you're going to lose everything. And that's one of the things that I did this past year was during COVID, I went debt free. Debt free to me means that I'm only paying for a house and some cars. And I eliminated a lot of those other stressors. The other debt that I may have, and I tell people, is education. Education is a debt that I have a 19-year-old at the University of Oklahoma. That's something that needs to be discussed. And certainly the VA helps pay for some of that and some scholarships. But you know what? I still have a deficit. But it's an investment. I look at it as opposed to a deficit. So that's a better way to put it. But there's a lot of veterans out there that need their what I call their map to success or their coat of arms. Where do I go today? And where do I go 5 years from now? And not doing it from today and then what happens tomorrow. No, have a game plan for the next 5 years. And in the nonprofit world, that's the way we should be thinking too. 2 year, 3 year, 5 year planning. And it's short range and long range. And to me, we'll be successful if we practice those principles.
Oh, absolutely. And I wanted to mention something. You talked about benefits and mental health. Veterans, if you're listening to this right now and you're contemplating on trying to get some benefits from the VA, you saying yes to benefits does not mean someone else gets told no. It is not a one for one. It's not an either or. Everyone is entitled to these benefits and you can go get them. And getting benefits does not mean you're incapable, does not mean you're disabled, does not mean you're dysfunctional. These are the agreement that we made with the American people to take care of us long term. You have earned these things and you need to go get them. And if you need help, I'm sure Major Ed can help connect you with those resources. And mental health, it is so important. I'm talking about this with my daughter and her teenage friends, that something traumatic happens to you. If you don't address this thing, whatever the thing is, you're not going to be able to move forward and grow. You might be able to accomplish a couple of things, but by and large, you're going to be broken on the inside, and it has to be addressed in order to move forward. And nothing is too small of a thing. I care about you. I know Major Ed cares about you. Reach out to us if this is something that's on your heart, on your mind, on your soul. Please, please, please do that, if nothing else. These are out there. They're there for a reason. And so many of our brothers and sisters in arms, they leave the military and they don't have a plan. I'm still active duty. This is something that I'm building here with the Nonprofit Architect podcast and the things that we're doing in our community, because I know that one day my services in the Navy is going to be over. And if I don't have anything set up, I'm going to be in the same position that a lot of you are in. And we don't want that. We want to ensure a successful transition, or if you've already transitioned, make sure you have the foundation to be growing and successful and maintain your family and your career and your housing. Please, please, please reach out if you have questions. Absolutely.
Well, and you know, the one thing to add too is, so I was, this is kind of personal, so I haven't really talked to many people about it, but I think it needs to be addressed here on this call. So I was asked to run for public office and I polled at about 65% favorable. And the question that I had for the people that were telling me, hey, you would be a great candidate, your favorability is high. And the kind of person I am, I'm like, well, listen, I love the favorability side, but what was the unfavorability piece to this? And they were like, wow, we've never really had anyone ever. These are people that are like running campaigns for political office. And it was for the congressional seat here that Stephanie Bice just won in Oklahoma. And then, of course, they asked me to run for her Senate seat at the state level, which to me, you know what, bottom line, I'm not, it doesn't pay what I need it to pay for me. And I would kind of go into political suicide in my home if I'm not able to pay my bills here at the house. So that's about it. And I love the people that serve their nation and serve their state. But to me, I had to kind of weigh those things in my time and the start of this new organization. Where do I devote my time? And it's not about me, but it's about the whole system. I tell you that because one of the things that was told to me about favorability was, I mean, I'm sorry, unfavorability, was that he may poll well in this area, but is his mental health, is he going to be competent enough to serve in the Senate or as a congressperson because of what he went through and his PTSD? Let me tell you something. In politics today, if you do not think that when you watch television and you hear those leaders in Washington, D.C., they're dirtbags, a lot of them are. And let me tell you why. And I don't say that in a negative way. A lot of these leaders that we have could care less about you. And they say they put on a good game and they say all of these things and something tarnishes them. And I don't mind sharing it because I've seen it. I've seen people changed with the political climate when they tell you one thing and they do another, or it's kind of like a WWE match when you're watching them on television. It's kind of like a scripted deal. Like they've got one script here and one script there. And then when they get together, they do something differently. And what I was told, which really kind of was hurtful, and I didn't realize it, was, are you ready for, if you run for public office, for them to address your competency levels because you went through what you went through? Knowing that there's people already in Congress that have gone through that and have been challenged, but because of their experience and because of several people that have ran for public office, Mr. Crenshaw, one of them, and a couple of others that I know personally, that is what all of them indicated that would be what the other side would go after them on. And that the other side would really cling on to saying that they weren't competent to hold public office. And it was Steve Russell, former Congressman Russell, who also said that when he told me, and I don't mind sharing this, it's very important because he did tell me this. He said, I said, why haven't you gone out and gotten your VA benefits? And one of the things that he said is, well, I do have some for injuries incurred, but on the mental health side, I don't want to go there because I don't want that to be used against me. I'm only bringing this up to you because that's deep, man. And that's where I go with the dirtbag mentality, that why don't we in politics and in America just address the issues at hand and what we are capable of doing to improve the quality of life issues for the American people, as opposed to going against each other and saying mean and vindictive things regarding our competency. And look, I get all of that, but for them to utilize those tools as a way to say that you're not capable of holding public office really is a shame to the existence of it. And now you're seeing it with this election. And look, it's not a political statement. The fraudulent nature of where we're at, what that tells me of our nation today is that we've lost our moral compass and our trustworthiness and our being able to go across the aisle and work together. And in the nonprofit sector, I've seen a little bit of that too. How do we change that? We all come together. We work side by side. We all take the credit and we all cross the finish line together as Americans. And that to me is something of a recipe of success for our legislators. And I mean, I've actually probably addressed that issue three times. But when I heard that, I was like, so you mean to tell me that they're going to just sling negative stuff because I was sent to combat, I was deployed like you and I have been, and I'm broken, but you sent me there. And guess what? Well, how did our World War II veterans do it? How did our Vietnam veterans do it? They did it the same way. But in this day and era, it's a little bit different. And I'll tell you that people will utilize some of those things to discredit who you are and what you're all about and what you stand for.
That really is a shame. I know I was very excited after the election for one simple fact. I didn't have to see political ads anymore. I mean, how do you even know what's true? This person is a dirtbag for these reasons. I've done all this stuff. And you see the next commercial and it's immediately, I know she says she did that stuff, but that's not what happened. Really, she's awful. Like what, like how is that supposed to endear me to one? We're not even voting for people anymore. We're voting against the other person. And I think that has a lot to do with the turnout we had in America. If I'm talking about a candidate, Tell me what you like about them. Don't tell me, well, the other person did this. I don't care about the other person. Tell me why you're voting for. I refuse to vote against anybody. I have to vote for them. If I'm not voting for them, I'm not voting. I have to vote for you. Tell me why I should follow you. Why are you the one to lead? Why should you have our support? Tell me. And if you can tell me, great. Absolutely. Let's talk about your candidate. I want to know. Well, aren't you on the other side? I'm like, I have, you know, my opinion, but I want to hear why you love this other person. Because if you love them, maybe there's something I'm missing.
And there's some great ones out there. I think just to clarify with my comment on the dirt, I call it the dirtbag mentality, where you use dirty tactics to improve your standing. And in reality, sometimes it's just best, just like you said, to lay it all on the line. It could be negative and it could be positive, but lay it out on the line. But don't sugarcoat it and tell me, hell, Major Ed, we're going to take care of the veterans and this and that. And then you do something totally different. And I've seen it done. I'll give you an example. I did a prosthetics paper for a group that went to Washington, D.C. I couldn't go because I had a conflict. And I had an event. Look, it was a big event. I couldn't get off that event. That's my bread and butter, you know? So I was asked to testify and I sent a paper up indicating, hey, these are my thoughts on prosthetic technologies. This is the way to improve. All of it had to really deal with the fact that, and we do a lot of work in prosthetic awareness and technology support, et cetera. But the premise behind the whole story was that I gave them this paper telling them, and this was before Mission First and all these other little programmatic things that you can have choice with. I said, I'd rather go to someone outside of the network of the VA that knows the latest and greatest in technology advancements because they know and understand and have received a training. In the VA, the problem with the VA, and they didn't really like what I said to them, but I was saying it. I said, the problem with the VA at the time, which the VA does good work too, but they didn't have the right people in prosthetics. They had the right people that could refer, but they didn't have them there to basically provide, to basically put the prosthetics together, to know and understand. I wear one of the top notch prosthetics in the world. They didn't have training in all of that. My point to all of that is, why would you not refer a veteran to the network outside and create these public-private partnerships? Well, they used that paper, and this group and others used the paper along with some legislators to really make it their paper. And that just, you know, that told me a lot about the fact that people like us work very hard. We have great ideas. And then people will just take your idea and just freaking run with it and basically kick you to the curb with it. And I get that, but that's not how we should roll. And that's where untrustworthiness occurs with our politicians, with when they say one thing and do another. And that to me is where I'm going with this dirtbag mentality of people that, you know, you sling the mud and you're nasty, and then you expect us to unite and be peaceful afterwards. Did that ever work with on the playground when the bully was bullying you? How many times did you make up with the bully? I didn't hang out. The bully was bullying people. I didn't want to be around you. That became, you know, the enemy, the Taliban on the battlefield. We're not singing Kumbaya if they're shooting at us.
I love the imagery of this, but there's just so much that we can do and that we know this, that we're stronger together. There's organizations, we're both in Oklahoma City Metro. There is amazing organizations in Oklahoma City, and I've partnered with a lot of them. There's amazing organizations in this country that want nothing more than to help. There's a lot of people that call me. They say, Travis, I want to start an organization. Great. Who in your neighborhood is doing what you want to do? And they say, I don't know. You have to find out. You know this. You got to find out. Someone out there is already doing what you're doing or close to it. And maybe you can work together in the start. Maybe you can even start a program under their umbrella. I know the United Way does a lot of that. It's fantastic. You don't have to start it all alone. You don't have to be the martyr that goes up on the hill to die every single day for the cause. You can go as a team and you can work this out. And maybe you start your organization and maybe you work with three of the five other people in town. You don't have to work with everybody, but work with someone, because as Major Ed and I know, the teamwork, it really does make the dream work. And when you're working together towards a common cause, everybody wins.
Well, you know, that's a great point you make. And remember, the little dog, I have some words that I use called tenets of success, but it's, you know, it's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the dog, basically, that is in that fight. And it could be the little chihuahua with the big pit bull. You know what I mean? My point to all of that is that the little small organizations evolve into big organizations. Wounded Warrior Project, they were there. There's also a deal called being there at the right time too. And they were there at the right place at the right time when they started that organization. Their logo was very strong too. The war is going on. People are getting hurt and there are needs to be met. And they started within the hospital-based actionables. I don't know if you know that, because I know John Melia real well, one of the founders of it. And they started basically helping people with care packages in the hospital. The reason why that was important was because you came off the battlefield with nothing. No underwear, no socks, no nothing. Because basically, you go into a surgical procedure like I did, you leave with your little robe that you have, and that's it. Your equipment's everywhere else. You don't have your computer. You don't have anything. And they figured out real quick how important it was to really define their mission. And that, to me, is what I tell a lot of nonprofits. Define your mission. You may be the small dog in the pen, but you could end up being the big monster dog in the pen. And I've experienced that with the Folds of Honor. With Colonel Dan, we started with nothing and we ended up at about $150 million in about 13 years of work. Do I plan on doing that with John Daly Major Ed Heart of a Lion Foundation? I never say no, but that's not the intent here. The intent here is to provide some support in some certain areas. And you know what? We don't have to be that big, but can we be at the table as the big dog in the pen? We've already started that way because of my experience and history, but that doesn't mean that you're the biggest player in at the table. You could be the smallest player at the table and still be a difference maker, but you got to define your mission. You got to understand what your values are and your guiding principles, and you got to know nonprofit status. And so I encourage a lot of people to go to the Center of Nonprofit Management. They have one in every state, and they basically educate you on outcome measurements, on your 990, on all of the things that are related to your audit, on making sure that you know the ratio of program to expense. Usually right at John Daly Major Ed Heart of a Lion right now, that ratio is like this. It breaks down to the fact that almost 90% of my time is spent on program, meaning that I'm out here taking care of people, making sure people aren't suicidal and they're getting taken care of, making sure that people have the prosthetic technologies they need, making sure they have peer-to-peer, making sure that they can go to Dr. Ellis's office and get their VA benefits taken care of. All of that is a programmatic expense. And then for us, we try to do the 10%, which is really 10, 20% admin and marketing and fundraising. But what I tell people is that's a 40-hour a week model. I work 60 to 70-hour a week model. I get up and I work. So in a different way, from an IRS perspective, that's how I roll out our deal, knowing that program is the most important. And we do have a marketing guy on hand. He does program too. We have another gentleman that does the fundraising aspect. We have a fundraiser, and then we have a marketing guy. And every one of them has at least a 75% threshold in making sure that they do something programmatically. And that, to me, is how your numbers look on the 990 and how all of that translates. And a lot of people don't know that. They get it to nonprofit. And so dig deep, board governance, board involvement, having the right board members, not the amount of board members, but not the quantity, but the quality. Meaning have a person in marketing, finance, an attorney, and someone that knows corporate citizenship. And then finally, having someone on the board that is a person that you help, someone that's a client, or someone that you are supporting in the mission. And the reason that's important is because that's kind of how a board is made up and should be made up in the nonprofit sector. And a lot of people will just put a bunch of friends on there just to have friends. Aren't you board of JDME? I'm not serving on the board because that's not how I look at it. I don't think you should serve on the board when you run an organization because that's the checks and balances. But I have people that are not, when we created this foundation, these are people that I had not, I didn't know them very well. And the reason we chose these people was for like interest. Our attorney, our sports management guy that we have that knows a lot of athletes, we were very selective, but I didn't bring in, you know, my good friends that I play golf with or I hang out with, because to me that they're already vested in me. What we want to do is bring in people that are going to cut us some slack, but also hold us accountable. And that's very important.
Yeah, too many people start up and they've got their spouse and their father-in-law and their buddy, and then they're like, "Well, why isn't anyone doing anything?" Those people love you, but they're not as vested in your project as you are. Or you're a veteran organization you're trying to start up and you want a board of all veterans. That is a great thought, but it might not help you grow the organization the way that you want to. Having the different benefactors, the different stakeholders and the different areas that you need help with is a much more well-rounded way to build a board. I know Major Ed's a major player, but for those guys starting up, you have your initial board, you have a fledgling board, and you have a fully functional running a larger organization board, and you're going to have to grow your board and change your board as you grow as an organization. But having the people in there that are going to hold you accountable is very, very important. If you just have your brother-in-law, you may or may not ever show up for a meeting, and you got a year going by, you're like, "Man, I got to get a meeting down to be right with the IRS."
You know, you bring up a good point too. And what I did miss was you also have to have an advisory group. And we're in the mode of creating that right now as an advisory group. They necessarily don't sit on the board, but that may be where your friends, your family members, your volunteers fall in. And they become ambassadors to your organization. And in creating that, there's a third tier really into this. Board governance is what I call it. And I used to teach this stuff in the nonprofit world and at United Way. That's where I learned a lot of it from, with some great mentors that taught me all of this stuff. But the other piece to that was you also want to create, I mean, that's what I loved about United Way. United Way actually has a lot of great things that they do. I think sometimes they got caught up in a little bit of negativity years ago. I remember having to defend all of those things, but their business model is a strong model. And I'll tell you why. Number one, they have agencies amongst them. They fundraise, which they take some money in, but in order to do that, in order to get these 60 partner agencies money, they're going to have to be able to go out here and pound it for them. These little organizations sometimes can't do it by themselves because they're struggling. So there's a lot of channeled things that are positive. So going back to one thing too, that we used to do very well at United Way, and we're doing it with Bold of Honor too, is we've created what we call junior boards. Me and you probably fall into that category a little bit because we're not at that stage where we're in our 60s per se. We still kind of want to be in the 30s and, you know, 20s, 30s, and 40s. But a junior board, if you really look at the dynamics of it, it's your 22 to 40-year-olds that want to get involved, that don't have the deep pockets yet, but really want to give of themselves and support the mission. The reason you want to have those individuals be a part of a junior board is that when they become thrivers and CEOs and those kind of things, and a lot of them may already be at that point, but when they do become that, you want them to be in your arsenal and you want them to move to the next level. And I think that's a powerful tool to have in your organization, is to have young people that really want to give back. And then you could take it to even a stronger even level of young people at the high school level wanting to do something powerful as well. You have to kind of watch all of that and have some ethics around that, because you're talking about young people. But in that same token, it helps them to grow and to pad their resume a little bit and to understand that they're doing it not only for that, but they're doing it for the greater good.
Yeah, and what a training pipeline that is to get them involved in something that they care about in the teenage years. And I've got a senior in high school right now. I know you still got one in high school. It's getting them involved in something that matters other than just caring about themselves. Cause it's so easy, especially for younger people to just get wrapped up in their own world. But Johnny's mad at me, but the world isn't ending. But no, he's mad at me, so I can't do anything. Like getting them involved in something outside themselves, whether it be sports, some kind of team in high school, or getting them involved in the nonprofit world that they can take something and give back to the community and see that they, no matter what age they're at, they can make an impact on the world around them. That is so important.
Well, I think, and that's an absolute good segue to say, like with your family too. My daughter, this was the first year we put her in private school, my youngest, and what I learned from it is that she gets up every Sunday and has to put in her community hours, basically. I will tell you, in public school, that was lacking. And I'm only making that point because we've worked hard to get her to that point. She was in public school last year, and you know, you have to seek out those opportunities in public school. In private school, they're mandating you to do that. It's part of the curriculum. It's part of your service. It's part of your community growth. And I wish that we would do that in public school more, instead of a volunteering deal, that it is mandatory for every student to contribute and to give back. And how wonderful would that be when you don't have your service hours? And it could be from a deal where you can make it to where they receive a one full credit hour or two full credit hours towards a philanthropy or something of that nature. And all of a sudden, they get a badge or a deal of honor that they can carry. Let me tell you something. You put that on an employer resume and part of this bigger movement around the nation, man, that just makes a difference. But that tells me as an employer, man, this kid did this, but this kid didn't. And you could even ask that question. What civic duties were you involved with in high school? And a lot of it is volunteer based, where I think it should be on a mandatory basis, or kind of like the Peace Corps, or go out and pick up trash in your local community as part of your community hours. I mean, go to a church, volunteer at a senior center, volunteer with you know, and they call it service learning, but not everyone takes that course. I think everyone in high school should take a service learning curriculum. And it should be an extended piece of what they already have as far as their other courses that they're taking. Not an elective, but something that's powerful to gain citizenship and patriotism in this nation.
Absolutely. And if you're in the Oklahoma City area and you're listening to this, I was on the board of the Shine Foundation, and they have a program that's Students for Shine, where they don't have volunteer opportunities, but you volunteer and they track your hours. And if you reach a certain threshold, you get a cord for graduation and you get a letter to use for any college application, ROTC, or for an employer that shows that you're doing something outside of yourself. And I think, especially with COVID, this is really the year of service, where people are digging deep, they're giving back. Those that are organizations that are asking for money, they're having record years because the people that have deep pockets understand what it means to give and the need that's out there. Major, I've loved this conversation. Of course, I love every time I get a chance to talk to you, like, you know, hanging out at your house for the 4th of July, which was wonderful. But
you have to come back.
I'm ready. I'm absolutely ready. Where can people get a hold of you and find the JDME Heart of a Lion Foundation?
Yeah, they can go to jdme.org and learn more about what we're doing. We're getting started, so we're doing very minimal, not minimal work. We're very strategic in our work. So taking on the veterans that we want, I got about 10 veterans that we're working with. Excuse me, Chris Morgan is one of them. He's doing our flags and stuff like that. We're going to build him a house at some point, steel building and some other things that we're going to be doing. And then we've done some stuff with prosthetic technologies, et cetera. So all of that stuff's humming along. They can go to jdme.org and learn more. I've also wrote a book called Warrior for Freedom. They can go to majored.org and get that. It's a good book. It talks a little bit about my life and about what I did purposefully to get to where I'm at today, and you know how that journey happened in that period of time. And now, of course, the journey is in a different trajectory because I never thought that my life would be where it is today. And I'm humbled and honored, and I pray every day that it continues to to lift me up and lift others up, and certainly lift everyone that we come in contact with. So again, jdme.org or majored.org to get a copy of the book and just learn a little bit about what I'm doing. And to book me on a speaking tour, you know, let me know. And contact me directly at 405-833-9092 or epulido, E-P-U-L-I-D-O at jdme.org.
Fantastic. Hey, brother, thanks for being on the show. Those listening will have all those links in the show notes, so you can just one click go directly there. And if you've got questions for Major Ed, let him know. Drop him a line. He gave you his phone number. Send him a text. Say, hey, brother, I need help here, or how do I get involved there? And he'd love to help you out. Thanks so much, Major Ed, for being on the show and being a great friend.
All right. Hoorah.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.